Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. I'm excited to be joined tonight by Deb from Los Angeles. Welcome, Deb.
Hi, Michael.
Great. Can you hear me okay?
I can. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Okay, great.
Deb, tell us about cultivating peace and sustainability from the inside out.
Sure. Well, this is work that involves combining awareness practice, the tools of our practice, with really helping people to address the issue of how to create a sustainable future. So how to go green and do it in a way that incorporates the picture. So peace and sustainability being one and the same practice if we really look at it on a big picture level.
Uh-huh. So peace and sustainability are actually the same thing.
Yeah. There's a lot of people really concerned about the environment right now and wanting to make a difference. But with a lot of people that I get to work with, their issues of anxiety and self-judgment and guilt and despair, overwhelm, all of that comes up in response to sort of the problems that we face regarding the environment. So when people begin to try to go green or try to make a change or deal with these efforts without also dealing with all of those feelings and finding a place of peaceful acceptance and empowerment themselves, then there's not really that much that they can do. They just end up getting stuck in the despair part of it or trying to make efforts but sort of beating themselves up along the way, this kind of thing. So what I'm talking about is a lot of just how to actually, again, using the phrase from the inside out, how to actually address the issues of being a contribution in the world, helping to go more green, and do it in a way that actually comes from well-being, from okayness, from that mindset that we talk about in Living Compassion of, you know, there's nothing wrong, but when I'm here, when I actually get present, it's just natural for me to want to serve and for me to have a sense of what's needed as service in each moment.
Yes, that's very exciting. And a couple things are coming up for me as you're talking. One is, it seems that what you're helping people to see is the difference between the process and the content.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and the other thing...
Yeah, because there's so much information.
I was just going to say, the other thing that I'm noticing is that, similar to conversations we've had earlier on Open Air, is that being the correct, quote, green person, unquote, if it's coming from a self-hating place, is really not a sustainable practice.
Exactly. It's not a sustainable practice. It's not going to last a long time. And the whole process of going green can be so much fun and so much about just sort of waking up to more and more well-being every day in your life if we allow it to be free of that judgment, you know. So as Sherry would say, none of us wake up in the morning and say, you know, how many ways can I make a negative impact on the environment today? But just being part of sort of the society and the habits so many of us have been taught, we do make an impact. So letting go of the judgment, how can we just take it one step at a time and expand our awareness of the things that we can do and also really commit to the practice of just staying present, staying awake, because that's the place where we can actually be available to make choices in the moment that are best for all, right, that are helpful.
Uh-huh, that commitment to staying present.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I can see as you're talking that as people make that commitment to go green, I can see that conditioning is just right there, I project. And you said all that despair and anxiety that comes up in people.
Yes. What are my efforts going to do in the big picture? And if I can't afford solar panels, well, I'm sure there's nothing I can do. And, you know, this kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's exciting
really
to me.
Helping people.
I was just going to say, it's exciting to me. It seems like what you're offering is a model for how we can make those concrete changes in our lives to be more green and do it in a way that comes from a place of peace and not from self-hatred.
Yeah, exactly. From peace and not from self-hatred. And it's neat because a lot of people also carry around sort of upset and judgment about what other people are doing out there that's not green, what people should be doing but they're not, people judging people who have been quote-unquote causes of the problem. And, of course, our practice offers instead the tools of, you know, really owning our projections and really saying, well, I'm going to start with myself and be the change and offer that to people just through kind of modeling. And again, it's just a more fun way to approach it. It's a more empowered and fun way to be.
Absolutely. That's my experience too.
Yeah.
And I can see how conditioning really wants to spend a lot of time and energy on what they've done wrong and what these people or this group have done to pollute the environment. And sometimes what I fail to see is that self-hatred will turn against me as well.
Yes, exactly. It will turn in both directions.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So in a way, it's just in the way that the monastery models sustainability so well, in a way, all that's required is that we learn to stay present and to, just in the way that the monastery is set up, let's say, to have all these different reminders and supports for staying present. If we're practicing sustainability in our homes, that's going to have the same impact and just help us to stay more aware, more present. So remembering to turn the switch off every time I'm not using it, to turn the water off as soon as I'm done, this kind of thing, just practices that help us to stay in mindfulness.
Yes, absolutely. And as you're talking, I'm imagining as I go around my house or my work during the day, that from that place, I'm open to what change is possible because I've made these changes, and coming from a place of peace, there's a real openness to see how else can I contribute? You know, what else can I do? Not from a place of something being wrong, but I wanna make a positive contribution.
Yes, and that's so much fun because that place of so being able to see what's possible, there's new ways we can deepen our practice of sustainability every single day for the rest of our lives if we're in that frame of mind, always seeing more creative ways to make less of an impact on the environment, to do things in a more healthy and eco-friendly way. And there's just sort of endless ideas that come through when we're in that place of possibility. So
yes,
it's a good deal.
It is a good deal. And to me, what's so wonderful is that you model this and you bring this to people, and it's clear to me at least that what you're doing comes from that place of peace inside ourselves. And from that, it's possible to make these changes, quote, externally as well.
Yeah, internally and externally, for sure.
Wonderful. So we see what's possible inside, and from that place of staying present and understanding our own inherent goodness, we can see the contributions that can be made.
Yeah, and it's interesting because when you watch someone go through that change, it goes from, again, that limited mind of, gosh, what can I do to be a contribution, and how can I find the time, and just this sort of place of deprivation, to a place of abundance in terms of all the ways I can contribute every single day and how energized I am to do those things, and being able to really turn people around me onto those things as well. So it just it's like practice, ever expansive.
Wonderful. Deb, thanks for joining us tonight.
Well, thanks, Michael.
Yeah, great to have you on the air.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm good, and I really enjoyed that. I say you two just kind of captured the whole point of practice.
Great.
Right there in that conversation, because the emphasis that I heard was on see what you can do, enjoy doing that, feel good about doing that, and that leads to wanting to feel good more. And so what else can I do to participate, to make and be a contribution, and then feel good about that? And slowly, just, you know, in Buddhism, we talk about the wheel of karma. And there's the wheel of karma, and it's just rolling along. And as we know, you know, the cartoon image for the way it feels when we're rolling along with karma is that we are strapped to the tread of the wheel of karma. And every time it, you know, makes that rotation, we get squashed under the wheel of karma. And then as we practice, we, you know, we slowly untangle ourselves, untie ourselves, and we get ourselves into a position where it can feel like, hey, we have to get Alex to draw all of this. And there I am, you know, I'm skidding down the road with this wheel of karma at my back, you know, just pushing me along. But at least I'm not getting smashed under it every time it rotates. And then slowly, we bring it to a stop. And we begin turning that wheel of karma in the other direction. And that's what you and Deb were just talking about. That's what Deb was articulating, that, okay, now what can I do that's going to be helpful? What can I do that'll be beneficial? How can I participate in a way that makes me feel better and makes me more of a pleasure to be around? And it just grows from there. And we are actually, you know, pushing that wheel of karma then along in another direction. And pretty soon we, you know, we realize that there are all these people and they're pushing their little wheels of karma in the other direction, away from suffering, toward liberation. And then pretty soon we realize, wow, it's just actually one wheel of karma that we're all pushing together, and that's the Sangha experience.
Yes, yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. And as both you and Deb pointed out, the role of judgment in really throwing a wrench into the whole process.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it really only takes just the tiniest little step back to realize how utterly useless, except for suffering, how utterly useless judgment is. It doesn't teach us anything. It doesn't get us anywhere. It doesn't help anything. It doesn't make us feel better. It is just utterly useless. Except in the hands of egocentric karmic conditioning to result in suffering. That's it. So once we get that, then I hope it's much easier to let it fall away, to just see it as the waste of time and energy that it is, turn our attention back to what we know works, which is how can I participate in a way that leads away from suffering and benefits all beings. And it's not hard. As Deb is saying, you know, you walk out of a room, turn the lights off. Turn the water off when you're not using it. Buy things with less packaging. See how you can reuse everything. Plant trees. You know, the list is endless of things that feel really, really good to participate in.
I agree.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, it's a good thing. Do we have any callers, Michael?
We have at least three.
Very good. Yeah. I hope one of them is the person we left on hold last week.
I hope so. We will find out. First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Dennis from Pittsburgh.
Hi, this is who?
This is Dennis from Pittsburgh.
Dennis. Hi, Dennis. What's going
on
in your world?
Things are going pretty well, I guess. I've been dealing with a lot of anxiety lately, but I listened to the show. It kind of converged. Everything kind of converged together, I think, because what I was seeing in my practice kind of matched up with your discussion with someone else about how, you know, anxiety doesn't really have much hold on you if you don't give it any meaning.
Yes. So, relationship is everything. You know, what we are in relationship with, it's another way of saying what we focus our attention on, is what's determining our lives, the quality of our lives. So, yeah, what we give attention to grows. What we turn our attention away from withers and dies.
Yeah, I guess I find that a bit confusing sometimes because it's not, I mean, I don't know, is this right? Like, it's not that you ignore the fact that you're anxious. You just don't make
With something like with anxiety, we actually do exactly the, well, it's the same thing, but we approach it in an opposite direction. And that is, instead of feeling the sensations in the body, so I'm guessing if you're like most of us, you feel those sensations in the about the third chakra in the solar plexus area. And so there are all those sensations in the body, and then what those sensations tell us to do is, although they don't say it this directly, if they did, we'd catch on, but that what you need to do is go up into your head and worry and plan and be afraid and review failures and predict failures in the future. Be very active, very busy. Yeah, some of those ring true? Yeah.
Yeah, I can see those.
Yeah,
and
what
like once you
go ahead.
You just see yourself going off and running with it, you know, and you're like, why am I doing this?
That's right. And so that why am I doing this can bring us back to what is actually helpful. And that is turning all of your attention to the sensations in your body. And there are some little exercises that you can do, that kind of little metaphysical exercises that you can do. One of them is to imagine a yellow fist, because you're a guy. You might want to picture a yellow rose. It's a little more gentle image. But, you know, if it feels like a fist is more accurate, then there's a yellow fist in your right in that solar plexus area. And that's the sensations of anxiety. And as you turn your attention to that part of the body, you just watch that fist open until there it is, an open hand. And you can feel that part of your body relaxing. So you can also breathe in the color yellow. Just every time you encounter yellow, just bring it into that part of your body and take a long, deep breath and let it go. Okay. Another technique, depending on your lifestyle, is to just once an hour set your watch or whatever and just lie down on the floor and relax your body completely for 5 minutes. And as you're doing that, you turn your attention to that part of your body and you just feel the most subtle sensations that lead to what you call anxiety that you can find. And so what you're doing in all this, and I would actually recommend that you do all of those things, what you're doing in this is breaking the connection between those thought patterns that can just, you know, rev you up and scare you to death, breaking the connection between those and the sensations in your body, because those sensations in your body are triggering the reactions that have nothing to do with the sensations in your body. Can you picture that?
Yeah, no, I can totally picture it. I mean, I remember you gave a similar, you know, visualization exercise with the chakras to someone else, and that's one that I kind of check in with every now and again.
Yeah, good.
And it's pretty helpful.
Good, because just before we move on from that, you know, I'm sure you know this experience, but you can just sit and drink 3 cups of coffee in a row, and you can produce those same sensations. You can produce anxiety by doing that, which is a really interesting, again, if you're up for that sort of thing, it's an interesting experiment to do, to just prove that when you create those sensations in your body, your mind goes to the same place. And to realize that all you're doing is sitting there drinking coffee. There's really nothing going on that warrants that kind of reaction.
Uh-huh.
So you were going to say something else.
Oh, yeah. That one's kind of hard for me to understand because I don't drink coffee and I never have. So.
But that's why I'm saying it's an interesting experiment just to do that and show yourself that how artificial all of that is, what a habit it is and how artificial it is. That there's an assumption, you started out with this, there's an assumption that it means something. You know, with
right,
anxiety, with anxiety, people assume they're anxious for a reason, but they're not anxious for a reason. They're anxious because they give meaning to those sensations in the body and the reactions that are connected in conditioned mind to those sensations. That's all that's going on.
Yeah,
what
so
else?
The other thing I was going to say is kind of closely connected, I think. So I tend to have these kind of like drama behaviors where I just, you know, I'm just off and flying. And I'm taking things so seriously, and if this doesn't happen, then this will happen, and so is that just an emanation of anxiety? Like, is that just, you know, if I'm unconscious enough and I'm not paying attention to these sensations, is that where you go?
Well,
because
yeah, so conditioned mind wants you to be in that state because. Or if we said ego, because that way you're giving it all of your attention, all of your life force. So in meditation, what we learn to do is sit still, focus our attention on the breath, relax and breathe. And then we observe how we get pulled off into whatever. And it's always pulled off into something that's going on in the mind. And it always is something about the past or the future, because that's where egocentric karmic conditioning has its, and my fingers are making the little quote marks here, has its life. So you're either here, present, breathing here, or you're off in an imaginary world of ego. Yeah?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Okay. So that habit of going to that place, that to be in that imaginary world of ego, so you get pulled into it. It gets you into a compelling drama that will keep you there. The compelling drama is having an effect on your body. So if you really get into it and the imagination is really, you know, revved up, then your heart will actually start pounding harder. You know, your breath will be affected. The sensations in your body are really getting amped up. Okay? And the more that happens, the more out there the story gets. So then, you know, pretty soon you're in this life and death and, oh, my God, and what's – and there's nothing going on. You could be sitting on your couch. And as far as your body knows, you are just in grave danger of something hideous happening to you at any moment. Yeah? So
yes.
That is actually, these two things that you're bringing up are exactly why we practice meditation. Because we have to learn to bring our attention back to where we are. And as we attend to the breath, the body naturally slows down. The breathing slows. If we don't give our attention to the thoughts, the conditioned thoughts, then actually the mind slows down, and as all that slows down, the emotions slow down, and pretty soon everything just becomes very, very, very calm, and you're here, okay? And when you're calm and here, there is no life for ego. Egocentric karmic conditioning does not exist, which you can prove to yourself, of course, in any moment when you're actually present. So that's what that relationship is. And it's constantly trying to pull you out there into an imaginary world, rev up the body so that the imaginary world is really real. There's a lot of anxiety going, God, there must be a problem. What is it? What am I going to do? How am I going to solve it? Okay. So in practicing meditation, we are really dismantling that whole system.
Yeah, I've been sitting maybe on average 20 minutes a day, and I found
helpful. That's right.
And things
yeah.
are changing. So, you know, yeah. I can see things kind of, I can see myself kind of flying off the handle, but then before it was like, you know, I didn't even notice it was going on, and then now I have the sense that really it's just, it's not actually me. It's just like my conditioning going out of control.
That's
and
right.
So I'm kind of flipping back and forth very quickly, and so now it's like a matter, I guess, of you know, paying attention for longer and not falling back.
Yes, and it's a practice. As you say, you know, you can remember back when none of this was available to you. But the more you practice, the more you're present, the more you see, the more real this becomes. Being here becomes more real than that imaginary ego world. And so as you practice, you will choose more and more to live here where you actually are. Now, people struggle mightily with starting and maintaining a meditation practice because it's obvious, right? Ego doesn't want you to meditate. Ego doesn't want you to pay attention to what's going on, to see through this whole process that we've described. So resistance is going to be huge to paying attention. Resistance to paying attention, to being present, to meditating, the whole deal. So 20 minutes a day, this is very, very, very good. And, you know, try to do as many things as you can, surround yourself with as much support as you can. It's usually easier for people to sit in a group than by themselves. So as often as you can, find other people to meditate with, get to workshops, get to retreats, that sort of, anything that supports practice, supports you in being here. It's all going to be helpful. Are you there, Dennis?
Sherry, I think we've lost Dennis.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I hope he was with us to, I'm sure he was with us to most of the end of that conversation, so.
Yes.
Yeah. Good. Now, it's so important what he's looking at. I mean, that's it. There's practice right there.
Yes, and to me, what's so helpful, what you were pointing at, is the resistance to practice.
Oh, it's just enormous. And again, earlier, you know, you were having the same conversation with Deb. The resistance to paying attention, the resistance to doing the simple little things that help the environment and help our relationships and the world that we live in, the resistance to doing those things, the pull to doing what causes suffering, what is harmful, what takes us out of the moment is huge because that's where egocentric karmic conditioning lives, and it wants that life force to animate it instead of us being here. So it's all the same thing, and it's just such a wonderful place in practice when we get that and we realize that what we want to do is be here, not I should do that, I should practice, I should sit, I should turn lights off, I should, you know, it's not that. That will make me a better person if I, no, I want to, because it's a happier way to live.
I agree.
Yeah.
Sherry, we're going to take a quick sponsor break here, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
The Zen Blues Quartet is a collaborative music project celebrating life and the music of the blues. Good musicians and good friends coming together to make something really beautiful simply because we can. Zen Blues Music. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life, what a life, my mind, what a life, what a life.
Please visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
I sure do love it, I sure.
Welcome back to Open Air. Sherry, we have three more callers here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Jane in San Francisco.
Hey there.
Hi, I am a first-time caller, and I'm super excited that I got through.
Well, we are just happy to have you with us. What's going on?
Two things. One is I had the opportunity to talk with you briefly at a book signing 2 years ago, and you talked to me about anxiety. So it was fascinating to hear the last call because in the 2 years since we spoke, I have used awareness practice to overcome a huge amount of anxiety in my life. I'm around flying and that sort of thing. So I wanted to offer encouragement that the practice can help
it really
with that
does
in my
work,
experience.
Doesn't it?
Yeah. So thank you for that. And then I've one thing I've been working on, listening to the archives, I've been really hearing the importance of not just using the practice when we're really suffering, or we think we're really suffering, but to make it a constant practice. It's not just like the tool we bring out when things are really bad. So that's what I've been working on, and I had this great experience this week that I wanted to share, using it in a kind of more everyday way. So last week, I broke one of my two front teeth. I'm one of those people who has nightmares about, like, your teeth crumbling and falling out. So this is, like, not – it's definitely, you know, and you could see it, and it's – you know, you look kind of silly with, you know, one of your front teeth pretty much missing. So,
those show up in cartoons with some regularity, right?
The
missing front tooth, yes.
Yeah. So, you know, it could have been an opportunity for conditioning to make me really self-conscious and not want to go, the idea of going to work with this, and trying to see my coworkers or, you know, be on the train and have people see it, because my dentist said he couldn't fix it for a week. Like, I had to wait a week to come in. Yeah. So at first I was, upset-ish, but, like, for only a few minutes. And then I, said, well, let's look at what's really happening and see what's, really going on versus the stories that I'm making up. And I noticed that I could still, talk, and I could walk my dog, and I could do my job, and it wasn't really affecting anything other than my sense of, my tooth being stupid and easily broken. So I got to spend the week not being embarrassed by having a big broken tooth, which was great, because I found out it doesn't matter. Conditioning would have told me, if you'd asked me a week ago, if that would be awful, I would have said yes. But it wasn't. It was fine. Nobody cared. So
that's right. Everybody goes pretty much what I did. Oh no!
Yeah.
Because we've all had things like that are just awful and painful, and what we don't want to have. And by the way, they're not that attractive. And so, there we are as human beings.
So, also, it gets better.
good.
So, I was at the dentist today, and I was listening to this show on a podcast on my way there, just kind of stay not hearing the stories in my head about going to the dentist and how awful that is. And when I got there, the dentist came in, looked at the tooth, said, yep, it's broken. You're going to have to make an appointment to come in and get that fixed. Which I thought this was the appointment to get it fixed. So, and the other thing is that I have a photo shoot tomorrow where people will be taking pictures of me smiling. And so I'm thinking, wow, this is, like, really bad. I've traveled, I took the afternoon off from work. I traveled an hour each way to get to the dentist. I have a photo shoot. And it was, like, it could have been big drama. So he left for a minute to see if there's anything they could do. And I thought of something else that I heard on the show. You were giving advice to somebody who was having a problem with a coworker, and you recommended that she think that he's a comedian. Everything he's doing is to be funny. So I said, well, maybe this is a comedy. Maybe it's not a drama. So, because if it were comedy, it would be really funny that, you know, you get through the week of having your tooth out and, you know, you've got your big photo shoot and you're going to have to go do a photo shoot with your teeth gone because that's just what it is. And it was great. It was awesome. Like, I totally got through, you know, the whole conditioning in that moment. It was fine. And I think maybe because I was not freaking out, the dentist came back and spent a few minutes with me and he kind of hacked something together and I still have to come back, but you know, if you're not looking right at it, it looks like a tooth. So so it's a partial solution.
Oh, that's
and
great.
And everything's fine. So that's the end of,
you know, that I'll tell you that those are the best practice stories. When you practice, you know, you're going through, you're letting go every minute of the way as best as you can, and you still get what you want in the end.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
All right, you know, conditioning would say, oh, sure, you know, go ahead, let go. And, you know, you're going to be on the cover of a magazine with no tooth there in the front of your head. And, you know, you really need to do something about this, and you need to get upset, and you need to, and you didn't. You just kept letting go and kept letting go and kept letting go, and then the miracle happens, and it comes out in a way that you wouldn't have anticipated, which is almost always the case, right? We never can imagine how it's all going to work out, and you wind up with a passable tooth.
Yeah, and, you know, even if I hadn't, I'm thinking, like, maybe people will think I'm awesome for letting a magazine run a picture with my tooth, you know, chipped off.
Yeah.
Like, who knows? It could be fine anyway. Like, it doesn't, who knows? It could still be.
I remember, is it Jamie Lee Curtis who a few years ago allowed herself to be photographed and not, what is it, brushed? Airbrushed, yeah. And, I mean, she was a huge instant hero to everybody because because there's somebody with guts enough to live out our worst fears and right out there in public.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, you could always knock that thing off.
Yeah. Could be a good experiment.
Yeah.
If it falls out tonight, we'll do that experiment, yeah.
That's right. Well, sure, because, again, we don't know how this story is going to end.
Right.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much, and thank you, Michael, for the show. It's a wonderful source of inspiration and support. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Jane. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I had some good laughs with that one.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, practice. You know, it just never lets us down.
Yes, and I just love that part of carrying around the Open Air archives, the podcast, on your little iPod. And I'm just imagining, you know, something stressful coming up, so let me put the iPod on. And I listen to them over lunch every day, and it's a really, you know, I come out of lunch, and I'm ready to go.
Yeah, yeah. Just spend that time with Sangha, getting some support. Because the alternative, as we were talking about with Dennis, is, you know, you're left at the mercy of those voices in your head because we're going to listen to something.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So, and I mean, might as well be listening to something that reminds us of who we really are and what's important to us and how we want to be with ourselves, and that's what Sangha is.
Great.
Yeah.
Sherry, we have two more callers here.
Mm-hmm.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Yes, this is Nancy from Driftwood.
Hello, Nancy. Are you there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, you sound very far away to me, but that's I can hear you.
Hold on just a second.
All right.
Is this better?
Way better. Excellent.
Oh, okay.
Well, Mercury is retrograde, and there is just no accounting for phones or computers or cars or teeth right now.
Well, that's really several people have asked me that today because the list of things not working at the monastery is as long as your arm, and it about once an hour I get a new report of something else that's not working. So it's comforting to know that that's what's going on. How long is this going to last?
Well, it's 3 weeks. It goes out of retrograde on the 1st, and that's the good news. And the cautionary news is for 4 or 5 days as it moves out of retrograde, there's a huge increase in the energy.
Oh, this
so the first three to fifth is a good time to just have a really good sense of humor.
This is very good. This is like practice again. We start practicing, and as we move out of such a deep and intimate relationship with egocentric karmic conditioning, the illusion of a separate self and self-hatred, things appear, at least, to get much, much worse than they were when we didn't know what was going on. So the transition out seems worse. I'm not convinced that it is worse, of course, but it seems worse than when we were in that, what conditioning would call blissfully ignorant place of not knowing what it's doing.
Well, what I have collected over the past couple of weeks is dying cars, dying phones, dying computers, keys dropped down elevator shafts. Any of this might be familiar to the people who are listening right now.
Yeah. Well, it's always fun to consider that it's something larger than us and is not actually personal.
And that brings me back to what has been so useful to me over the last couple of months is that not taking it personally thing.
Yes, it's a very good life plan.
I'm involved in a community theater group, which is all volunteer. There's no money involved, which really amps up the ego stakes. And it's so funny when I can just pull back and go, oh, they're not doing this to me. This isn't being done to me. This is just being done, and I happen to be there.
Right. You're just close to the action.
I'm close to the action.
You know, that's so interesting to me because I suspect that even when people think they're doing something to someone else, they're attempting to do something to someone else, it's not actually the case. That the recipient still doesn't need to take it personally because it's actually all about the person who is involved in the behavior.
The person doing it.
Yeah, the person doing it.
And what I'm finding is, boy, this is all the big practice for the thing I'm really working with is when I can finally take family issues unpersonally and just go,
mm-hmm.
wow.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what can be helpful in that is a little foray into genetics. You know, with all of the DNA stuff that's been going on and just to find out who you're actually related to, then you combine that with Buddhism and the notion that you know, everything in the universe has been your mother, then this particular group of people who happen to be assembled here at this particular point in time, it really takes on a whole different and far less intense sort of a character.
Now, I missed that statement. You said something about in Buddhism, everything in the universe
it's a thing that Tibetan Buddhists say, but it's that everything, because this is just like a big recycling center, and everything is just going around and going around and going around and going around, which is what, you know, modern science has helped us to see on a very tangible, practical level. And so when we begin to realize that all of this, everything in your body has participated in countless other things. It has participated, in fact, in everything that has ever existed. So why are we getting so worked up about a particular relationship with a particular person when this is one relationship in God knows how many relationships that all of this system has been involved in?
Yeah. And I see that when I breathe, too, especially with other people, as the breath goes in and out of me. I just think
especially when you're
everywhere
especially
else
when you're
going.
On an airplane.
Well,
it becomes horrifyingly apparent.
Well, part, I actually called in to talk about getting a new car, which my 19-year-old car finally suggested that it would really like to retire. And that just sent me into an absolute panic for a couple of days. And as I addressed it, now I drove home the new-to-me car yesterday. What occurred to me was that there was this astonishing lack of drama around it. And I keep thinking of that wonderful woman that's rowing across the Atlantic who said that she didn't have a big enough backpack to carry fear. And I just thought, wow, I can actually go out and do this, what seemed like impossibly overwhelming, no way in the world am I old enough at 56 to buy a car, event, and it can just have no drama attached to it. It just feels good, felt safe, glad I did.
Yeah.
And I like the idea because drama, to my mind, tends to be fear.
Mm-hmm. And it's best saved for the little community theater company.
Pardon?
It's best saved for the community theater.
For on stage.
Yeah, when you go on stage, you want to be terribly dramatic. But in real life, it's not at all necessary.
And it just seemed almost bizarre not to have done that, not to have reacted that way. I kept thinking maybe there had been something wrong with the whole experience because it was so smooth and level and just pleasant.
Yeah, that's how life actually is.
Oh, my gosh, this is big news. So I wanted to, it's just such a pleasure to be listening to the show again after hiatus, and thank both of you very much again, and I will let someone else interrupt.
All right. Thank you very much for giving us the news about Mercury, and
Don't sign any contracts between now and the 5th.
Okay. I'm going to keep that in mind. Thanks, Nancy.
All righty.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Nancy. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I'm really enjoying the show tonight, having a lot of laughs.
I don't know if you ever listened to Garrison Keillor, what is that show called?
Prairie Home Companion.
Prairie Home Companion. I don't know what I was doing or how I happened to come across that show as I was driving somewhere, but they had the joke show. And they just tell, like for an hour, they just tell the corniest jokes that you can imagine. And it's a good thing. I think maybe we should have a comedy retreat. You know, where people just come with funny stories and jokes and that sort of thing, and we just laugh, you know. Could be, you know, a short retreat, maybe 3 days, something like that. We just all laugh for 3 days. Wouldn't that be good?
I think it'd be great.
Yeah, people think spiritual practice is so serious, but spiritual practice, as we know, is not serious. It's conditioning, taking itself seriously, that makes life so serious.
Yes, indeed. Sherry, we're going to take a quick sponsor break, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
Bulldog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. Sherry, sometimes I wonder how I got so lucky to find this practice and be involved with the show.
Oh, boy, me too, Michael. That's one of my favorite things to consider. You know, when you look up at the sky and say, why me, God? Why me? And know that it's just with overwhelming gratitude. How did I ever get so lucky, so blessed, so fortunate to find this practice.
Sherry, we have a couple more callers here.
All right.
My turn.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Catherine from St. Louis.
Hello, Catherine.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I really needed the show. This is Fear Night, and I'm very scared. I'm having a lot of fear around. I retired Saturday from my job of 31 years, and it was a very sudden decision. They had layoffs at the newspaper, and under our union contract, people can come forward to volunteer to be laid off. And then people who are laid off can come back. And so I volunteered and retired.
Wow.
And, yeah, it all happened in about 3 days.
Well, did we say congratulations?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Fine.
Yeah, good. Congratulations. 31
Thank
years.
You.
That's
31 years.
That's a lot of years.
That's a lot of years, and I got some good guidance from Dave while I was trying to make the decision as to whether to do it. And so I'm fine with that decision, but Saturday was my last day on the job, and I woke up Sunday very scared about what do I do now. And I'm seeing... I'm really stuck there a lot. I'm really in the grip of worry and fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't
What do you think would be a good alternative to that?
Well, I am actually able to come back to the breath.
Good. Now, let me ask you this. Uh-huh. Did you do the Living Beyond Karma class?
Yes.
Did you do a project?
I did.
Did you make money?
No.
Oh.
I didn't.
Do you still have access to that class? Did you save it anywhere on your computer?
Yeah.
You might do it again.
Okay, are we not continuing with the class?
Oh, yeah, we are. But
the
point that I'm making is that, the idea that I put forth in that class was figure out something that you want to do, that you find exciting, that lights you up, that puts a spring in your step. We had just put all those cliches together in one sentence, and that is going to generate money. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And nothing ever came to me that I wanted to do. Came to me to do didn't generate money.
But it could. As soon as you put your head to it, I think that you will be able to figure out something that you would really enjoy doing that would generate income for you. and would keep you from being focused on the fear.
So while I'm feeling fear, I can do that?
Oh, sure.
Can you get in?
Because what happens is the fear. Now, of course, there is no such thing as feeling fear. Let's get clear about that. Okay, this is full circle back to the conversation with Dennis. There is no feeling fear. Fear is a conversation. Okay, you have sensations in your body, and you have a conversation in your mind, and people put that together and call it fear. But there really isn't any such thing.
Okay.
You with me on that?
Well, I believe you.
Yeah. So what happens
is... And I feel like I...
Go ahead.
Well, I feel like I had some other experience then. And the experience was, I thought, you aren't going to be able to pay your bills, and then I felt this knot in my stomach.
That's right. That's exactly right. And it goes both ways. So sometimes people aren't aware of what the thought is, but there is a thought. Okay? First there's movement, then there's sensation. We have a thought about it, we have an emotional reaction to it, and we have a conditioned behavior that goes with it. Okay, so if we play with that little sequence. So you have something triggers you to have that thought. Okay? When you have that thought, then there's the whew of adrenaline. Then there's another thought, which is, that's fear. I'm afraid. Okay, so you start watching how that loops around, how the conversation, there's that conversation, which probably at this point is just such a habit that everything causes you to have that thought.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah? So then there's that thought that shoots the adrenaline through your body. That adrenaline through your body means this is real, this is fear, I'm afraid, there's something real to be afraid of. Those thoughts bring more adrenaline and you're just in a loop. So those thoughts, you know, what you're doing, so we're bringing that wheel of karma to a halt, you can come back to your breath, okay, you come back to your breath, you can do these simultaneously, you can watch this process that I'm talking about, and you could do Dennis's experiment, which he didn't seem excited about, but he's going to do anyway, I can tell. You know, sit down and drink 3 cups of coffee and watch what happens to you. And what you'll see in that, if you're open to it, is that those sensations can be artificially produced, or not artificial, I mean, they're produced as they're produced, and the same connection will be made. So So that's one part of it. Then, if you're going to have adrenaline in your body, you might as well have adrenaline that you enjoy, and that's what it is to be enthusiastic or excited or inspired by something. So you know, suddenly, I actually thought about you the other day because I read something that these people had put in a doggy spa, and what it is is a place where people can have daycare for their animals. So if they need to go somewhere for a few hours, they can drop the dog off at the spa and. I think they call it a spa. I don't know if they have, you know, treatments, but the point is, it's like a daycare for animals. And I thought about you. Actually, the thought went through that. No, I think Catherine would be good at something like that. So there are all kinds of things that once you break the, how should we talk about it? The habit, the addiction, the attachment to fear thoughts as a way of having the adrenaline rush, when you break that habit, then you will have more space open, available to you for having energy go through your body that is from something that you will enjoy, that you'll like, that you're in excited and enthused about. And the thoughts will come in. Now, see, because right now, conditioning is living off of this relationship that you're in between fear, worry, anxious thoughts, and the sensations in your body. That's where it lives.
Sherry?
So, yeah.
I think we've lost Catherine temporarily.
Why do these people keep going away?
Well, you heard
I'm starting to have abandonment issues.
Yes. And I think Mercury is in retrograde.
No kidding.
As Nancy was pointing out.
Yes. Yes, so none of us will take this personally.
Yes,
people just fall off of the airwaves. Do we have somebody else?
We do. Let me bring that up.
Maybe we do, huh?
Let's see. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Anne. I was actually dropped a few weeks back, and when I tried to call back, the show had already ended, so I'm finally getting back in.
And you know, there are no guarantees for anything tonight, right? Apparently until the 5th of February, we just have no idea what might happen.
Well, I have to tell you, when I was dropped the last time, I realized it was actually good. I mean, I was frustrated for a second, and then I thought, oh, my gosh, I was so identified on that call, and I can't believe it. So it was sort of an awakening experience for me.
Oh, lovely.
If you will.
Yeah. So, that's good, huh?
So, yeah, I wasn't sure I was going to get back in on tonight. I tried to call one other time and couldn't get through. I guess you're just too popular, Sherry.
I know. Doggone it. It's a curse.
It's a bad thing. Well, at any rate, the issue that we had talked about so many weeks ago, it was probably about 4 or 5 weeks ago now, seems to have resolved itself somewhat. And I'll just refresh your memory briefly. We were talking about how I was doing some volunteer work, and I wasn't feeling particularly appreciated because it sounded like people were complaining at me, you know, during the volunteer activities. And again, when I got dropped off of that call, it just felt like, oh, I see where I'm so identified in this.
Uh-huh.
And so I was able to step back from that a little bit, but subsequent to that, and I feel like, I feel like it doesn't exist as an issue for me as much anymore. But on top of that, because I am still volunteering, I'm watching my process now because I'm involved with it's new for this year, but it's not new to me. I did it last year also as a volunteer. I'm watching how I'm approaching the activities with some amount of fear is probably not the right word, but dread and just a lack of willingness to get excited about these things again.
Mm.
And so I'm just trying to pay attention to, and in fact, I was listening to archives in the car as I was driving around today, and I heard you say to somebody in one of the shows to just pay attention to what's distracting me. And it was so timely because I realize that I'm distracted from what I need to do for my volunteer activities. And then I guess I must be beating myself up because I start to dread having to do what I'm doing. And I just wondered if you had any guidance to offer on that.
Well, let me ask you this. Why do you volunteer?
This particular activity that I'm volunteering is because I feel it is a worthwhile activity. It actually has to do with some of the things that my kids are involved in at the school, and it's just a fun activity that's the culmination of a season of music for them.
Okay. All right. And so somebody feels that this is an important, worthwhile thing to do.
Right.
And I'm curious if you have a sense of whether or not the person who does it is that person or someone else. You know what I'm pointing at?
Yeah, I know what you're pointing at. Is there an overlay or is there another personality sneaking in?
Yeah, who either is taking stuff personally or is not really, in other words, somebody coming in who really doesn't belong there. Because I would bet that you could find any number of personalities who don't want to volunteer there.
Right?
Yeah. But somebody wants to, and yet she's not really being able to be there unless she really is the one who's dreading it, which could be an interesting place to look. Does somebody feel like this is a worthwhile thing to do, you know, just sort of as a theory, you know, cleaning the house is a good thing, and then points the finger at somebody else and says, okay, now you do it. And that person says, I don't want to do it. I don't like it. I don't enjoy it. I don't want to. So it could go in at least those two ways.
Let me make sure I understood what you said. That
okay.
There's a possibility that there's two personalities here, one that wants to do the activity and then somebody else who steps in and says, no.
I don't like it, and what about them, and why are they that way, and this is not fun. And
but you also said that they might be one and the same?
No. This will be for you to explore, right? And then you're going to get back to me, right? Yeah.
Okay.
So
to see
if that's what's going on, like to really bring forth the person who wants to do this. This is important. This is worthwhile. I want to do this. This is my kid's school, and this is the and I really want to do this. I don't care what those people are doing. You know, I really don't care. I want to do this thing. And then somebody else comes in and says, well, yeah, but, you know, blah, 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 and it's taking the fun out of it.
Right.
Or is it that somebody says, well, now that would be, that's a worthwhile thing to do. You know, kind of an authority sort of a person, you know, says, well, now that would be a good thing for someone to do. And then points the finger at a personality and says, so you do that. Because it's a worthwhile good thing to do. I'm not going to do it, but you should do it. And the person who got the nod really doesn't want to do it. And you see the difference in those two scenarios? Yeah. Now, it could be something completely different from either one of those, but those, I think, would be really interesting places to look. First, to see if you can bring forth the one who's enthusiastic about it, who just wants to do it,
mm-hmm.
and then see what is the relationship with whoever that is who's concerned about what other people are doing and that sort of thing. Or if there really isn't anybody who actually wants to do it, then who's putting it forth as an important thing to do?
Wow. That sounds tricky.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of, you know, to me it's easier if we look at other things. So, you know, so I say I have this part of me that says, you know, families should have the opportunity to eat at least one home-cooked, nutritious meal a day.
Mm-hmm.
And then turns to somebody else and says, so you need to cook them. Which is a very different situation from the person who said, I love to cook. I want to cook really healthy, nutritious stuff for my family. I'm gonna do that at least once a day. That's a very different approach.
That will be a very interesting exercise for me.
Yes, I think so. I think it'll be really fun to get to know these people and watch closely what their relationships are.
Okay. Well, thank
you
for that suggestion. And thank
and
you
then,
for the show.
And let us know.
Yeah, I will. Thank you, Sherry. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to another great edition of Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, it's 6:01 p.m.
Thanks, Michael.
Yes,
we
and
made
I should
it.
Mention yes, and I should mention that I see two people on hold here, and I'm going to encourage them to call in next week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll look forward to it.
I will definitely look forward to it.
All right.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thanks, Michael. Good night.
Good night.